Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
It's a tough thing because there's this fine line. There's the, what I call like this valley that people are allowed to travel in for a good while before it rises to the level of being allowed, being restraining order worthy. I mean, they can be really, really annoying without rising to the level of getting a restraining order. It's not great, but it is what it is.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Today's topic is protective orders, the straight dope. When do you need them and when can you get them? I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So restraining orders are something that can come up fairly often in family law matters because we're dealing with people that their emotions are high, they're upset, they're angry, they're hurt, fights happen, and things happen. So the issue of a restraining order or a protective order, and they are different things, and we'll talk about that, but that can come up quite often, and it does put a different flavor on the case. Now, they don't only come up in divorce cases. Restraining orders or protective orders can come up in any type of a case where you have two parties or that are in conflict or that need to be kept apart for some reason, or one of the parties feels they do.
Yeah, sometimes they're called injunctions as well. It's a type of injunction, which is just the court saying, you party, you're not allowed to do something, or we're stopping you from doing something. So sometimes it's called that too. But most people, I guess, call it a restraining order. But, you know, people will come into my office and they'll say, you know, he drove by my house a bunch of times, or she's, you know, calling my girlfriend over and over. Can I get a restraining order? And, it, you know, it's a tough thing because there's this fine line. There's the, what I call like this valley that people are allowed to travel in for a good while before it rises to the level of being allowed, being restraining order worthy. I mean, they can be really, really annoying without rising to the level of getting a restraining order. It's not great, but it is what it is.
Yeah, well, annoying is not usually the legal requirement for getting a restraining order. The way I explain it to clients when they start talking about a restraining order is, in the states that I have practiced in, you need to prove to the court that you are in fear of imminent physical harm from the other party. Because what you're asking for in most restraining order cases is that the other party be restrained from doing something or being somewhere where they normally, under the Constitution of the United States of America, have a right to free egress, ingress, going where they want to. So someone's rights are being, in some cases, severely impinged. In a case where you're asking, say, that your spouse not be allowed to come home to the marital residence that they own, it's their property as well, yet you're asking for a restraining order that they not be allowed to enter onto their own property. So it has to rise to a pretty strong level.
Yeah, and just to define it a little even further, it means that that person won't be able to contact you at all, won't be able to contact you through third parties. They won't be able to reach out to you on social media. They won't be able to direct message you. They won't be able to text you. They won't be able to email you. They won't be able to come within 500 feet, usually, of your residence or your place of business or any regular place that you go. And it does reflect on their record. If somebody looks up into the court docket, whether or not that person has any kind of record, they will see that some kind of legal action was taken against them that restrained them from being near you. And a lot of people don't want that on their record.
No. Well, and you may have reasons why you don't want it on their record. For people who are in jobs where they have security clearances or they have professional licenses where background checks are done, things like that, it can affect their ability to earn, which may have an impact on your world if you're expecting support. But that's, you know, what Rebecca is saying there is the serious nature of a restraining order. Now, we're not saying that they are not warranted in certain circumstances where you have domestic violence, where you have imminent fear of physical harm from someone, which certainly comes about. That is what they are there for. They are there to give people something to hold on to that will keep that person away from them. But the process is, you know, there's a process that you go through. So the initial request for a restraining order is usually done what we call ex parte, which means without the other party being present, meaning you go to court by yourself or perhaps with your attorney, but the person you're asking to be restrained, to impinge on their rights, they're not there, so the judge is only going to hear your side of things.
Of times it's just submitted to whoever the duty judge is, and you fill out what we call an affidavit, which is a sworn document, so that it's as if you were sitting in the courtroom saying these words. It's under oath, and you write out all the things, all the reasons why an injunction should be issued ex parte. And then if it is determined that it can be issued, and by the way, stalking is, in Florida, they actually, in the last probably 15 years, they added and stalking. It was two incidents of imminent bodily harm or fear of imminent bodily harm or stalking. So whatever that may mean to a judge, but once the judge gets that affidavit and it comes across his or her desk, they'll read it and they'll look at the statute and they'll say, does this rise to the level of the statute, at least just on plain words? And then they'll issue that protective order or that restraining order, and it will get served on the other person. And then there'll be a hearing in very short order. Because
usually within a couple weeks at most.
Yeah, because you are infringing on somebody's rights. And so because of that, they will have their day in court and they will get to come in and say, you know, you're going to now have to prove all the stuff that you said in that affidavit. And the other side is going to get to say, yes, this is true, or no, it's not, and here's why. And at that point, the judge will determine whether or not an injunction or a protective order, restraining order should go out and be more permanent. So maybe for 6 months or a year or maybe even forever, something like that, depending on how bad it is. And you can bring them on behalf of your children, by the way, too.
Yeah, and pets in certain cases. In Connecticut, anyway, court forms were added so that you could include a family pet in the restraining order, that the person not be allowed to harm, harass, or, you know, be near the pet if you had someone who, unfortunately, domestic violence, people who perpetrate domestic violence will often start with a family pet before they progress to members of the family. So they've that's, you can get orders that keep the person away from your children and your pet and you. And, you know, those ex parte orders, you have to have something in that affidavit that tells the judge that for this 2-week period of time, that it's sufficient that they should restrain the other party from being near you. There's actually a case, it's a very sad case going on right now in Connecticut where I used to practice, a mother who was going through a long-term high-conflict divorce in Fairfield County, asked for a restraining order. It was denied. And 2 weeks ago, she disappeared and has not been seen since. And I believe just about 3 or 4 days ago, the husband and his girlfriend were just arrested for tampering with evidence and obstruction of justice. But it's, you know, those are the cases that I guarantee there's some judge in Connecticut right now who's living through some sort of a nightmare of his or her own for not issuing that restraining order. But it, sometimes it's not the judge's fault. It's that in that affidavit, the person didn't put down the facts that the judge needs to know. And I've seen that many times where people will go and fill out the affidavit with rather, you know, oblique, oh, he looked at me funny, or I just feel scared. But they don't talk about, and then he threw a plate at me, or he blocked my car with his car, or she, you know, did something very specific that led me to be in fear of physical harm. And so that affidavit is actually very, very important, that it be structured properly and give the judge those finite details so they can hang their hat on that in issuing it for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. A lot of times I've actually told my clients to make sure to hire an attorney to help them fill out the financial, I mean, the, not the financial affidavit, the affidavit that goes with the petition for a restraining order, because you're going to want somebody who can help you elicit, not, I mean, certainly you would never make anything up, but at least elicit the information and put it down in a way that you know it's going to pass muster under the statutory obligations. The thing I want to mention is that when that petition and affidavit comes across the judge's desk, the judge also has the choice to not enter it ex parte, but just go ahead and say, serve it on the other side and set the hearing. So the hearing would be set, but the injunction's not in place yet. And if the if your husband, boyfriend, wife, girlfriend, whatever, finds out about this and then you lose, now that person's going to be emboldened. That person's going to feel like, look, ha, 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 you tried to get this on me, but you weren't able to. And so, therefore, now anything you're going to try to do is not going to work. And so, you know, you just don't want to embolden them in that way and empower them in that way. So you, if you're going to go for it, you want to be sure that you have enough that you're going to actually get it put in place on a more permanent level.
Yeah, you know, and to that, I have always said to clients a lot, the same thing, is definitely get some legal advice. You do not need an attorney to go to court to get a restraining order. Most jurisdictions have streamlined the process for victims of abuse so that it's not a daunting process. But you do need to remember that the judge has a legal standard that they need to meet in order to issue that restraining order. So you need to give them specific details. You can't be sort of vague in your references. And for people, you know, who have suffered types of abuse, it can be very difficult to share that with the outside world, to talk about being hit, to talk about, you know, being attacked, or, you know, the different threats that have come. It's hard for people to go through that. Unfortunately, that's exactly what a judge needs to hear.
And I mean, I've had cases where the mother suspected that maybe something was going on with the children. And, you know, and she really didn't want to put in a petition that's going to be filed with the court that she thought that the husband was sexually molesting the child or something like that. But unfortunately, if you want the injunction to be issued, you have to give the judge the information so that he or she knows what to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's just it's unfortunate, but that is the legal standard. And, you know, you're not going to get the restraining order. I don't know the facts of that underlying case and what was alleged in the affidavit in that particular case I was talking about. But I suspect it was that what was in the affidavit didn't rise to the level of issuing a restraining order. And clearly, if she has disappeared, it seems like there were probably some circumstances that might have led to a restraining order if they had been able to be in front of the judge. But, you know, one of the things that I wanted to mention as well is the difference between a restraining order, which is issued by a civil court judge, and a protective order, which is issued by a criminal court judge when there is an act of domestic violence in which one of the parties is charged. So at least in the jurisdictions in which I've practiced, if one of the people is arrested for domestic violence or any type of harm to a domestic partner, there is almost always an automatic protective order that goes into place that's ordered by the criminal court judge, which is essentially that no contact order that Rebecca mentioned earlier. Absolutely no contact through any means whatsoever. No, not social media, not third parties, not text messages, not anything. And that's done in those cases to protect the victim. There's nothing that the victim needs to do to get that issued. That is just automatically issued.
But you can get that even if it's not automatically issued, you know, at least in the states that I've seen. I mean, if you want a protective order issued, you file that petition and you can allege the facts that you need to. In other words, you don't have to have had a domestic violence incident. You don't have to call the police. You can get it issued. But again, you know, yes, do whatever you need. I always tell people, do whatever you need to do to protect yourself. If you are in a situation where you are going to be harmed, or you've already been harmed and you're afraid it's going to happen again, do whatever you need to get out of that situation. Go to a shelter. You know, the shelters for abused women or abused people, they will help you. Go call the police. You know, whatever you need to do, don't take this conversation as a means of, oh, there's nothing for me and there's no way that I can get help. And then once you get to safety, then, you know, with your attorney or with the people that are helping you, you can make a determination as to whether or not it makes sense to go ahead and try to get some kind of a more permanent protection put in place.
Oh, you know, absolutely. I second what Rebecca said there. There's nothing in what we're saying here that we intend to deter anyone from doing what they need to do to protect themselves, to protect their children, their families. And that's why these orders are available. What we really want to get across to you is how, if you need one, you can be successful in getting one. What factors that you need to get across to a judge so that you will be successful. You know, that's an important part of it. It's not just the need, it's the getting it before the court in a fashion that you're going to get what you need from the court. We're going to take a quick break now to tell you about our new sponsor. We're really excited to be pairing with BetterHelp Online Counseling.
Is there something that's interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you.
You know, much like Breaking Free Mediation lets you work with your mediator online, BetterHelp Online Counseling also allows you to connect with a professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. It's really convenient.
You can connect via phone or video, chat, text, in any areas like depression, stress, anxiety, trauma, anger, grief. Anything you share is confidential, and you can start communicating in under 24 hours.
And best of all, it's truly an affordable option. Our listeners get a 10% discount off their first month with discount code BREAKINGFREE.
So why not get started today? Just go to BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE.
That's BetterHelp.com/BREAKINGFREE.
Are you struggling with how to manage and handle a high conflict personality? Do you feel like everything you do is futile or that your words are constantly being twisted? Breaking Free Mediation and Coaching is now offering a brand new coaching program called Coaching Through Conflict, how to successfully manage high conflict personalities. If you're dealing with a narcissist, a bipolar personality, or someone who's just simply overly difficult, this program is an absolute must. If you are ready to finally break free of this cycle of abuse and conflict, email us at bfmediation@gmail.com so that you can get started today. That's B as in boy, F as in Frank, mediation@gmail.com.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on protective orders, the straight dope, when and how you get them.
In a lot of restraining order cases or even protective order cases that are coming through the criminal court, the two people involved, the victim and the abuser, so to speak, are usually in a romantic relationship. And they had a fight, they get into this fight, one of them gets arrested, say, and they get a protective order issued against them. And then they make up. And so now the protected person goes, oh, it's okay to come over, it's okay to text me, it's okay to call me. And then they do that, and then they get into another fight. And now the person who was the victim says, oh, you just violated the protective order. You did.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including mediation do's and don'ts, tips from top divorce mediators.
I've had clients come in all the time who just sit there and say, well, aren't you just going to tell, I want what's fair. Aren't you going to tell me what that is? Just give me my fair share.
Yeah, like how are you supposed to know what that is? You know, yeah. Just mind read. You should know. Yeah. It's everything. That's what's fair.
Yeah.
And now we return to today's show.
Not to be jaded, but a lot of the judges are jaded. And they see people who are filing and asking for these types of things to be put in place as a means to create leverage in the divorce action. And so, you know, you'll have people who will file something that's false against the other spouse because they're trying to get a parenting plan in place that you know, is better for them. Or maybe they just want to punish the other person. They're just angry at them for some reason, something like that. And in those instances, that's where the judges really lose patience and they get upset. And especially if they were led down the wrong path and all their judicial time and resources were wasted because they start to see that it was just used as a litigation leverage mechanism. And so what happens is the judges start to get jaded. So you just want to make sure that what you're saying is absolutely true, number one, and that you say what you need to say to get that protection in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you see those situations. I was just thinking as you were speaking, Rebecca, about high conflict personalities. And, you know, I have seen in many of my cases that rise to that high conflict level, people seeking restraining orders and making allegations that turn out to be completely unfounded. But they are a common, I'm going to call it, tool in the arsenal of a high conflict personality. The ones that I've seen it most often with are people who probably are exhibiting borderline personality disorder tendencies or narcissistic personality disorder tendencies. But there's something in that high conflict that can raise the emotional level, and, you know, people who don't have a lot of respect for the truth will throw out that allegation or call the police when nothing has really happened that rises to the level of domestic violence, but then will call the police and make allegations to try and get the other person arrested. So I've always told my clients who are on the other side of that paradigm, who are the non-high conflict personality, to remove themselves when they need to, whenever anything starts to seem like it's going down that path, because more often than not, I have seen the high conflict personality either seek a restraining order or call the police in unfounded circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, one of the things I wanted to expand on, something that you had said earlier, and that is the difference between a civil and a criminal injunction. And one of the main differences is how it is enforced and what the courts can do once it is violated. I actually had a client who came to me as she had already had a different attorney. She had actually had a criminal injunction in place, and her attorney allowed her to be negotiated out of that, and a civil injunction was put in place instead. And 2 days after that, she's on the beach with the kids, and the guy comes jogging by and says, "Hello." And she's like, "Oh," she called the police right away. And the police were like, "Oh, we can't do anything with that." Because with the civil injunction violation, the mechanism to enforce that is that there is now a contempt of court. So now the judge can do whatever they can do for contempt of court. With a criminal case, the violation, you can call the police, they'll be arrested. It's totally different path, different courts, different path.
Yeah, a criminal violation of protective order is a crime in and of itself. And it's one that the courts take very, very seriously in my experience. So where you have a protective order in place that's protecting the victim of domestic violence, and then the perpetrator does anything, texts them, gets in touch with them, that is considered a violation of protective order. And it really, I mean, the more severe it is, the more severe the punishment. But there's going to be punishment just for texting or just for violating in any fashion. It is a crime.
They'll be arrested immediately.
Yeah.
Whereas with the other one, it's contempt of court. So now you're dealing with whatever the court can do as far as sanctions in a civil realm. So it might be a fine. It might be something to do with, you know, striking pleadings or doing something with your discovery, or it might be an attorney's fees assessment or something like that. But it's not going to be the same ramifications at all.
No, I did have a judge once from the civil court refer the file to the state's attorney's office for review for a protective order, because he was that disturbed by what had been going on after the civil restraining order was issued. So, but yes, the hands of a civil court judge are just, they have less available to them or different remedies available to them. But another thing I wanted to be sure to mention, because I have had this come up all the time as well. So you have in a lot of restraining order cases or even protective order cases that are coming through the criminal court, the two people involved, the victim and the abuser, so to speak, are usually in a romantic relationship. And they had a fight. They get into this fight. One of them gets arrested, say, and they get a protective order issued against them. And then they make up. And so now the protected person goes, "Oh, it's okay to come over. It's okay to text me. It's okay to call me." And then they do that, and then they get into another fight. And now the person who was the victim says, "Oh, you just violated the protective order." You did.
Absolutely.
Because if that, yes, you are going to be arrested again, even though she said or he said, come on over, I love you, it's all fine. You cannot violate a protective order with the permission of the victim. There is no permission of the victim.
No, that is a very, very good point. I actually had a client one time where the restraining order, it was still in the temporary phase. We hadn't had the final hearing yet. But during that temporary phase, she had gotten the restraining order or the protective order against herself, for herself and for the children. And she then texted him while this thing's in place and said, hey, if you want to see the kids, you can come on over and take the kids overnight or whatever. And so he's, you know, asking me, can he do it? And I said, no, absolutely not. And he said, well, isn't going to look like I didn't want to see my kids. And I said, no, because you will be arrested if you go do that.
Yeah. Well, and for the person who goes and gets a restraining order and then turns around and says, oh, you can come over and see the kids. What did you just tell the judge in your case about your veracity, about your truthfulness? You just in some way led that judge to believe you were in fear of imminent physical harm or being stalked in the case that Rebecca was talking about. And now you turn around and say, oh, I'm fine being around her. It's okay. I said it was okay. I felt fine at that time. You undermine your own credibility by doing something like that. But people do this all the time. I see this in cases with restraining orders more often than not, where there's a violation of the order, and it's usually with the permission of the person who sought the order or the victim.
Yeah, and if you're saying that the husband or whoever is a danger to the children, and you've now got that in your pleadings, you're asking for sole custody, and then you start texting and saying, hey, come on over, or can you watch them, or can you drive them to soccer, or whatever, you know, it's, again, going to undermine, just like what you were saying, you know, be careful about your words. Make sure everything agrees with everything else, because whatever your weaknesses are, wherever you leave room, if your spouse or soon-to-be ex-spouse has a good lawyer, they're going to see those points and it's going to come up.
Yeah. And do realize, you know, restraining orders, protective orders, these are extreme measures. They are certainly warranted in extreme circumstances. But in court orders, just say in a parenting plan or in your final settlement agreement, you can put language in there about speaking respectfully to each other and not calling or contacting each other only regarding the children if it's a high conflict situation, or, you know, not texting multiple times a day. I mean, I've put language in the agreement. I always call it
aspirational
good behavior.
I call it aspirational.
Yeah, that's a good way. I call it good behavior language, but aspirational is probably a better description. You know, we put language in the agreements that unfortunately you can't enforce it until someone breaks it, you know, and you put in there.
Well, and even, you know, to respect each other and be kind to each other, it's so aspirational because it's really hard to enforce those in a court order.
It is. You know, I've had success in cases where we have multiple violations, or I get somebody on video. I think it was Laura Wasser who talked about the case where the ex-husband came to the door and the Nest camera at the door got a video of him being, you know, verbally abusive. Those are
right. And he knew it was there because he had installed
exactly.
Himself.
So no claim to privacy there. So, so there are cases, I mean, restraining orders are definitely warranted in many, many cases. If you're going to be seeking one, I think it's very important that you go about it the right way. Be educated in what a judge needs to know in your jurisdiction in order to issue one. The best way to do that is to reach out to an attorney or to social services, sometimes victim services. Sometimes the courthouse will have somebody at an information desk to help with restraining orders. Many courts will have someone in the courthouse there to help people fill out the application for a restraining order, again, because the court wants people to have access to that relief. But be educated on that. As Rebecca said, we help people all the time fill out that type of court paperwork and help them to find the right descriptive words and terms to get the actual facts out there that are going to impress, you know, I use the word impress, but are going to make an impact on a judge so that the judge feels they can issue that restraining order.
Absolutely. And as we said, do whatever you need to do to keep yourself safe. Call the abuse hotline. We will put the abuse hotline number in our show notes as well. But do whatever you need to do to keep yourself safe.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.